Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, the unprecedented performance of Ultra Wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra Wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G Ultra Wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800 plus cities. Global claim based on open signal independent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
Queens, Amazing Avenues Monolith Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How's everybody doing this week?
Good.
Good, good.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I have a pretty good Forward Extend trade.
Oh, yes.
So, for anyone who listened to our show last week, you know that I had some computer problems. Ironically,
are you doing names for the IT podcast?
On today's date, 32 years ago, 1988, a lot of people had computer problems because the first documented malware replicated itself over the internet and launched all over the place. So, of all of these famous hackers, I guess, famous computer whizzes, whatever you want to call them, who are we going to promote, who are we going to extend, or who are you going to trade?
Steve, I absolutely thought you were going to say promote, extend, trade your three favorite malwares.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, I guess you should just trade all the malware, because yeah. They all suck.
True.
All right, so first we have David Levinson from Independence Day. Then we have Morpheus from The Matrix. Uh-huh. And finally, we have Dr. Hal Emmerich, also known as Otacon, from Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, that's hard, because I want to promote two of them. I'm promoting Morpheus, because I love the first Matrix movie, the first one.
You mean that there's more than one Matrix movie?
Okay, I actually have a take. I don't think Matrix 2 and 3 are as bad as everyone says.
Oh, and I like 2 a little bit.
Yeah, 2 is enjoyable.
Like, I don't dislike 2. 3, I think, came out too soon. But I like 1.
I saw the first one. That's the
extent. They're making 4.
Yeah, I know.
I'm extending Morpheus, promoting Metal Gear Solid Dude, and trade the other one. Not that I want to trade him, but it's unfortunately necessary. Yeah.
He saved the planet.
Yeah?
Yeah, but he's less cool.
Yeah.
You want to tell Morpheus you're not promoting him? Come on.
The thing is, Morpheus is kind of a dick.
You're not wrong.
What?
Maybe not a dick, but he's kind of an asshole. I don't know the right word. He's just too smug. He's the kind of smug you want to punch in the face.
Yeah, but he's smug because he's right.
Right, he is right. I mean, there is that, but you don't need to be smug when you are right.
You
could tone it down a little.
Lucas was like, that's when you'd need to be smug.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if he was wrong about everything, which I guess he was in a way, because, like, spoiler alert, if you've not seen the second two... Oh, Ken hasn't seen the second two Matrix movies.
I highly doubt I ever do. So, go for it.
Canceling the Netflix subscription thing right now.
Uh-huh.
It's getting sent back in the mail. Like, 2006 or whatever.
I mean, he was kind of wrong about Neo being the one, not just the latest version of the one, I guess. Mm. But, you know, everything else is pretty accurate.
Yeah, no, he was right, but he's just punchable.
Are you an agent, Steve?
That would be cool, but no.
Yes, yes, I too want to be a faceless, mindless killing machine in a virtual reality, yes.
I mean, isn't that kind of what you do on the side?
How'd you find out my day job, Steve?
And then Otacon is pretty cool too, but he's like the opposite of Morpheus. He's just too cringe. He's not really cringe. He's just too much of a, I don't know. I can't use these words that I want to use, but.
No, yeah, yeah. You're going to get us censored. Or get an angry email from Concerned Mothers Weekly or something.
Yeah. And that's usually not, I'm not the one that happens to, so.
Yeah, well.
All right, well. So that's that. Now let's move on to the CPBL, KBO, and MPB. And the Taiwan series between the Unilions and the Brothers started on Saturday. And on paper, it looked like it was going to be a pretty good game. Series, really, because the Lions are the top offensive team in the league and the Brothers have the best pitching. So it's definitely good matchups. And game one definitely lived up to the expectations. Brock Dykshorn, he took the ball for the Unilions. And Esmail Rogers, former MLB journeyman who played mostly for the Rockies in like the early to mid 2010s, he took the ball for the Brothers, and the two of them basically matched zeros inning after inning for the first half of the game. And the Lions scored the first run in the game in the sixth inning on a Chi-Chi-Su RBI single, but the Brothers basically got that run back instantly when Dykshorn gave up a solo home run in the bottom of the inning. So things got reset, and the game stayed tied until the 10th inning. And in the 10th inning, Wu Hsong Pan, a pinch hitter, he hit a fly ball into right field that bounced off of the padding at the top of the wall for a three-run homer. And the Unilions took the lead. And that was the fourth pinch-run homer in Taiwan series history. And closer Yun Wen-Chen made it pretty interesting in the bottom of the 10th. He loaded up the bases, and he allowed a run to score. But in the end, he got a strikeout, and the Unilions won Game 1. So they have one game edge now, and statistically, things are looking pretty good for them because every single Taiwan series that they've played, they won when they won the first game. And with the Brothers, every single Taiwan series that they've been in, that they lost the first game, they lost the entire series. So, looks good for the Lions. And then they have Tim Melville going in Game 2. And the Brothers have Jose De Paula, who's a former Padres farmhand. He's going to be taking the ball for them in Game 2. So, it'll probably be another pitching duel. Next up are the LG Twins in Korea. And coming into the week, they had already clinched a playoff berth, but they were in second place, So that meant that they were going to start the playoffs in the semifinals. Unfortunately, this week they went 0-2, and then coupled with how the other playoff bound teams did, the Twins dropped to fourth place, meaning that now they're going to be starting as one of the two wildcard teams, them and the Kiwoom Heroes. So those two teams are going to play each other in the wildcard series, and then the winner of that will play the Doosan Bears in the quarterfinals, and then the winner of that series is going to play the KT Wiz in the semifinals, and then the winner of all that will play the NC Dinos in the Korea series. Not the best situation to be in, but they're in the playoffs at least, so that's good. And finally, the Occult Swallows, and they went 0-4 with two ties this week. So,
oh boy,
yeah,
they're really having a Mets. No, it's not a Metsian finish not even to the season. The Mets would like finish the season strong and give you hope for next year.
Yeah, this
year
is like
they're just getting worse and worse.
The Pirates.
Yeah.
But even though they went 0-4, two ties, they only lost a half game in the standing, so that's good. They're only 24 and a half games behind the Yomiuri Giants, so not bad. They went third. They're currently 38, 64, and 10 on the year, so We sometimes, like, you know, we talk about how we'd prefer the Mets to just either be really good or just be really bad and tank. And just kind of witnessing the Swallows be really bad and tank, I don't know if I'd be able to stand the Mets actually going all in and just being terrible.
It'd be so, like, I don't know how, like, watching it would be anything but, like,
I mean, depressing. The problem is they were that bad. They just didn't do it intentionally, and that was, like, 2009 to 2011.
But they were never that bad, though.
They were pretty bad, Steve.
They were pretty bad.
But... what was that 2009 opening day lineup? Opening day lineup, Mets.
2009? No, I think it's been not that bad, though, because things got bad as the season progressed. Your 2009 opening day lineup probably had...
yeah, I think they were good
had,
until the like, wild card. May or not the wild card, the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Okay, no, you're right. The 2009 lineup is pretty much what you'd expect.
You still had Delgado and Beltran and everyone.
Yeah, Delgado, Beltran, Castillo, Wright, Reyes, Murphy, Brian Schneider. It's the 2010 lineup that's a real disaster. I'll be impressed if anyone can name more than three players outside of Johan Santana as, like, the starting pitcher that was in this lineup. Anyone want to take a crack at that?
All right, so 2010.
Yeah.
So first base, Ike Davis.
Nope.
No. Okay.
Second Josh base. Satin?
Nope. Mike Jacobs.
Oh. Huh.
Was that Omar Quintanilla? Was he floating around yet?
No, I think he showed up later that season, didn't he?
Gotcha.
He strikes me as like 2012, Omar.
Yeah, Quintanilla. He was a bit later than you really realize. All right. Luis Castillo?
Yep.
Third base. He was still around then.
Yeah.
I would have known he was still there. Yeah, third base is easy.
Third base, David Wright.
Yeah.
Shortstop, Jose Reyes.
No. Not Jose Reyes.
No?
No. He was hurt.
Really?
This guy's a cheater.
There's a lot of cheaters in baseball. Jose Altuve.
Yes, Jose Altuve starting shortstop in 2010. No. Alex Cora.
Was that the year that he ended the season with surgery on both thumbs?
Yes, I believe it was.
Because, like, I remember, like, the Mets just, like, dropping that. Like, he had, like, I remember reading it, and I was like, how do you have surgery on both thumbs and, like, function as a human for, like,
guess,
weeks?
Guess which guy played for the Mets and has two functional thumbs? Not this one!
Let's see. Center field is Carlos Beltran.
Nope. Beltran. No. Was hurt and then traded later this year, I believe. Jeez. Right?
Well, Jason Bay was playing in the corner somewhere.
Yeah, he was in left.
Angel Pagan was in center.
No.
Andres Torres?
No. They didn't. They traded for Torres in between.
That was in the Sandy regime.
Yeah. Gary Matthews Jr.
Oh my God.
I would have. We could have been on this podcast for 3 hours, and I've never gotten a Gary Matthews.
To spare our viewers, right field was Frenchie, and then catcher was Rod Barajas.
Jesus.
So, not a great lineup.
Wow.
Not great, Bob.
It's still better than the Swallows, I guess.
True.
I guess.
35-year-old Gary Matthews Jr. starting in center field. Yes, excellent.
Good work, Omar.
Lobby gets center fielder?
Well, here's actually, this kind of segues in well. The next player that the Sydney Blue Sox named. So, this joining Francisco Alvarez, Carlos Cortez, Andrew Mitchell, and Manny Rodriguez is Adam Aller. Now, is that a name? Yeah, exactly. Is that a name that any of you recall?
Hoomst?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Hoomst the fuck.
Yep. A lot of you out there might be saying to yourself, Adam Aller. And I'll admit, I had the same reaction. I had to look it up, obviously, when it was announced. And Adam Aller was acquired by the Mets last winter in the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft. Obviously, there was no minor league season, so he didn't actually make his Mets debut. So it would be understandable if you don't know who Adam Oller is.
How do you spell the last name?
O-L-L-E-R.
What the fuck?
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah.
I have no memory of this player in Gandalf meme.
He was initially drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates out of Northwestern State University down in Louisiana in the 20th round of the 2016 draft. He was pretty solid there. He's actually, like, more or less their best pitcher. But the stuff, you know, wasn't too impressive. So he was selected in the 20th round, and he signed for just $70,000. Spent a couple of years in the Pirates system before getting released after the 2018 season. And he made it as far as playing for the Bradenton Marauders, which is their high A affiliate. And then instead of retiring after getting released, he got convinced to just basically give baseball one more chance. So he signed with the Windy City Thunderbolts, an indie team in the Frontier League. And he was really good in the couple starts that he made with them. He gave up just 2 unearned runs in 27 innings. So that got the attention of MLB scouts. And the San Francisco Giants ended up signing him. And they sent them to the Augusta Green Jackets, their low A affiliate. And he was so-so over the course of the rest of the year. He posted a 4.02 ERA in 87 and a third innings. And then after the season ended, the Mets picked him in the Rule minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft. And here we are.
The peripherals were quite good. 9.58 K9, 2.68 BB9, 5.52 home run per nine. Like, that's not bad.
Yeah. His fastball was kind of low 90s or so prior to going to the Indies and stuff. But during that last offseason, he was doing a lot of workouts with, like, the flat ground people and all them. And he gained a couple of miles per hour on his fastball. So it kind of sits low 90s, low to mid 90s. Tops out at 96, so there's something there, definitely. And then he has a curveball, slider, and a changeup. Historically, this curveball was kind of his go-to pitch, but the Pirates wanted him to learn the slider, and they had him use that. So, again, maybe being out of that system and being able to use the curveball more than the slider is going to be more beneficial to him. But the only thing is, lefties really kill him, and historically he's been better as a starter than reliever, so transitioning him, when and if that ever, you know, might need to be the case, might not help him out. But all in all, you know, he's not any better or worse than some of the other guys that the Mets have at that level, you know, high A slash double A, so...
I'm always interested. I wonder if some of these guys who have, like, these, what's the best way to play this? Like, this second career almost, right? Where they get out of baseball and then get back into it. I wonder if they aren't given enough of a shot a lot of the times because people just assume they suck.
That's probably what happens, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they might be a totally different pitcher now, but people are just like, eh, you're not actually good, even though they might be a fundamentally different player. I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm just considering the general case.
Well, it's also like, I think because there's an influx of new players every year.
That's true.
I think a lot of teams are like, why would I sign this person?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just this new person who is younger and we don't know anything about them yet, so they might just be better from the jump.
The Mets have had a pretty good track record over the last couple of years of looking at those guys and, like, correctly identifying some of them. Chris Mazza, he was signed out of Indy Ball, and he went on to play in the majors this year, so...
He was on the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, yeah. That would have to be a win.
Yeah.
What's his name? Mickey Janis. You know, he never actually cracked the majors, but he was signed... you know, into the system from independent ball, and he basically became the, you know, longest tenured best pitcher in Binghamton history over his 3-4 years, whatever that he was there. So
Who was that Delgado pitcher they had for a couple years? I couldn't remember. Another, like, useful upper minors depth arm they got from Indy Ball.
Casey Delgado?
Maybe. I don't know.
Hmm.
There's so many nondescript arms that have floated through the system over the years. They all kind of blend together after a while.
Yeah. But, you know, hopefully, maybe. I mean, if they're sending him there to get some actual, you know, in-game innings under his belt, and obviously they targeted him in the draft, so they must like something. They must think, we can work with something.
Yeah. And it's just especially weird for us because we didn't have a season to, like, watch any of these guys either. So, like,
right. I mean, he literally did not play a single game in a Mets uniform, so to us, it's just like, what?
Who?
Exactly. I would say that we, the bunch of us and a lot of other people, you know, in our similar circles and our listeners and stuff like that, we all kind of follow this kind of stuff obsessively. So for just a guy to kind of fly under everybody's radar, it's just like, ooh, okay. But I guess that's what happens when you have your season cut short by a global catastrophe pandemic.
Right.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's going to be funny if he ends up being good and we're like, we look back on this and we're like, oh, remember that when we didn't know who he was because COVID stopped the minor league season? That was wild.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'll take it. That just means that, you know, he's become a good player and is probably helping the Mets, so.
Hopefully.
Unless they trade him to the Los Angeles Angels for
that awful
Justin
Mike Trout
Upton
contract.
And Justin Upton and Jordan Adele or something.
You're putting it, I had pushed it out of my mind, Steve, and now it's back in my mind.
All right, well, let's go to commercial break then, and maybe that'll help it get out of your mind there.
Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and in more cities, the unprecedented performance of Ultra Wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra Wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G Ultra Wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800-plus cities. Global claim based on open signal independent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
This is advertiser content.
We now have 2.3 million people incarcerated in America. Less than 7% of them are incarcerated for violent crime.
That's attorney Jeffrey Robinson, director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. His work inspired the making of Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Who We Are, a chronicle of racism in America, is hosted by Peabody Award-winning journalist Carvel Wallace.
Surely you knew this was a racist country. What does that mean for us today?
The prison population in the United States has increased 700% since 1970. Black Americans make up almost 40% of it.
We didn't get here by accident. I didn't know these things because I hadn't been taught them. And then the question is, why wasn't I taught them? Because this information, it may be hidden, but it's hiding in plain sight.
Who We Are takes a historic look at the disease of racism in America and traces it back to its tipping points. This includes the tipping point we're at today.
I think Americans are watching and thinking and looking at this issue in ways they never have before. And that's why I say this is our last best chance. Because if we don't get it right this time, where America is headed is someplace I don't think anybody wants to go.
How do we make our last best chance count? Listen to Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Now streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so this week's topic, ironically, we got an email about, so that worked out very nicely. And our email's from Matt Brew, and Matt writes, quote, I've seen the comparisons of payrolls between the Rays and the Dodgers throughout the World Series, and the implication is that LA is given an unbelievable advantage because of this. What I have not seen is the advantages that a small market team such as the Rays are given in terms of competitive balance, draft picks, larger international draft pool money, etc. Clearly, what both teams have in common, and what we hope for the Mets in the near-term future, is that they have made good use of the systems in which they operate. So my question is, in terms of roster construction, do you think that there's a massive advantage given to large market teams, so long as they actually spend like a large market team, of course, compared to small market teams? Would you rather be the Angels right now or the Pirates? Love the show, Matt Brew. So first of all, Matt, thank you for listening. And of course, now we confirm that we have two listeners.
Him and Ringo, right?
Yep, Matt and Ringo. So,
yeah, I mean, let's give the easiest, obvious answer here first. Yes, being a big market team is an advantage. I would rather be the Angels than the Pirates or whoever. The other part of that being that the Pirates could spend that much too. They just choose not to, but that's a whole other thing.
Like, the Angels' problem isn't in being a big market team, it's that the guy who runs them is a lunatic.
Right. The guy who runs them thinks, hey, let me sign Albert Pujols to a $3 billion deal. Nothing could possibly go. Oh, shit.
It's
good that Major League Baseball kind of evens the playing field a bit and makes it like not impossible, like in some, like I'm mostly thinking about in like soccer leagues overseas and stuff, where like if you're a smaller team, it's just too bad, like you're never going to be able to compete unless something crazy happens. But like, still, I would just rather be the Angels. It's just easier. Like the Rays have no margin for error, like at all. Like if they mess up a trade or something, then that sets them back not forever, but if something goes wrong for them, then they have to really work to fix it. But if the Dodgers sign someone and it doesn't work, then who cares? Like the Yankees signed Jacoby Ellsbury and that was a disaster and it didn't matter one bit.
Oh yeah.
Trying to think about the last time. It's kind of funny to because the Dodgers haven't made any moves that really sucked.
Well, yeah, I know. I was just using them as an example.
Yeah. Like, A.J. Pollock wasn't great his first year, but he was actually quite good this season, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Like I guess Pollock's the best type of example, and he's still good.
God damn, that team is so freaking good.
They're like the perfect storm of being, like, really smart and also having unlimited funds.
They are basically what we
hope to be.
The Mets to be, yeah.
At Steve Cohen 2.
I'm so disappointed it's not a fake account, if I'm being totally honest. I want it to be.
It's like the biggest ruse ever.
I'm trying to also come up with the last time the Rays made a bad trade.
That's true.
Like, they freaking swindled the Pirates with the Chris Archer thing.
Well, that's the thing. They don't really do it, and we've seen that their margin for error, it doesn't matter. They're still competitive all the time. But, like, in an alternate universe where they do the Archer trade and Archer's a star and who they got back isn't, then they don't make the World Series.
We're being idiots. That's the exact example we brought, right? Because the Pirates are that small a market team.
Yeah.
They trade for Chris Archer and give up Meadows, Glasnow, and Shane Baz, who is also probably going to be real good. And that, in combination with a whole bunch of other shit, just fucks them.
Yeah, and they're screwed now. And they had to rebuild. They had to blow it all up.
They'd still be bad, but they'd have Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, and Shane Baz.
They'd have the makings of a pretty good team.
Right. Yeah.
They traded Cole for nothing, and look where they are. And it's just, when you're not a smart organization and you don't have a lot of money, you're the Pirates, and they're one of the worst teams in the league. So,
no, don't be the Pirates. No one wants to be the Pirates.
And I mean, I guess the Mets are a good example of they acted like a small market team, so like one bad contract would kill them, because like they needed everything to work out perfectly, and they didn't, and the margin for error was them missing the playoffs all the time, even with a with some type of money put into the team. Not enough, but... Like, they signed Cespedes and it didn't work, and here we are. Like, they were terrible. But if the Dodgers did that, then the Dodgers would just have had Cespedes hurt, and then their top prospect would have taken over, and it would have been nice.
I mean, they had Gavin Lux sitting at the alternative site the whole season, so...
Mm-hmm. So basically, what it all boils down to is an investment in analytics and an investment in scouting.
That's the other thing, right? Like, and I don't think the Dodgers do this nearly as much, but the Rays make 10 million little trades, right? The Dodgers just go out and trade for Mookie Betts because fuck you, we can, we have the money. The Dodgers go out.
Right, sure. Like,
That the Dodgers just go do that because they can. The Rays go out and make 30 little trades, and I don't want to say that the cumulative sum of the value is equal to Mookie Betts because it probably isn't, and also roster management issues. But the point being, they accrue value in these micro steps, and if they misstep at any point, right, like they it doesn't work anymore, right? You need to get. Not 30, but you need to get 10 of these things right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot harder. It's a lot easier to get the, hey, maybe we should trade for the second best player in baseball and pay him a lot of money. It's a lot easier to do that than say, well, we think this guy is 10% better on your team than the guy we have, and we know that you haven't recognized that, so we're going to swap him.
Oh, so that sounds stressful, like to work in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're, not like, a good environment.
Like, If the Dodgers came up to, like, if I worked for the Rays and the Dodgers came up to me and offered me a role, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm out. Because all I gotta do is worry about, like, the check my boss could sign this dude. You know? Like, I have unlimited prospects and resources. Let me go do whatever I want.
Yeah, pretty much. Although one thing that I was not really aware of, that just kind of watching the World Series broadcasts brought to my attention, in terms of, like, micromanaging how to maximize every single player and every single possible competitive advantage, was the Rays bullpen and how almost every single guy throws from a different arm slot. And
that is
such a cool thing.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's so cool.
And I'm assuming that it was done intentionally because some formula somewhere shows that, you know, batters will be, you know, X percent, you know, worse against, you know, a kind of array of pitchers like that. But that's such a cool thing. Like,
this is why I've always thought a knuckleballer in the bullpen would be interesting. But that's a whole nother discussion.
Well, Ari Dickey still technically, I don't think, retired.
Mm.
The Mets need bullpen help, though.
The Mets need bullpen help. You know, the Wilpons are gone, so new ownership can, all that bad blood can be gone, you know.
Now, I will say, I've already forgot the name of our emailer. I'm sorry, whoever you were.
Matt,
you made a good point about the competitive balance picks, because that's absolutely a quote-unquote advantage of being a market as small as the Rays. And again, if you have this elite level of evaluation advantage, then you should be able to leverage this. At the same time, I'm flipping through some of their supplemental picks. In the last couple of years, Drew Rasmussen, Tanner Dodson, like it's not like they're landing huge stars here, and that's not how you should evaluate the draft, but it's also just such a crapshoot that it doesn't totally matter.
Tanner Dodson sounds like a Chappelle Show character.
Tanner Dodson, actually a cowboy. I saw him when I was at Cal. Center fielder, starting pitcher. I don't know what he's doing more for them now. I don't think he's particularly good. Interesting prospect, though. The bonus pool money might be the more impactful part than the actual players they picked up, and that's harder to evaluate.
Mm-hmm. Basically gives them more, just all those competitive balance picks and everything basically gives them more, what's the word? better lotto chances, I guess, to put it in that kind of phrasing. More roles at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Tanner Dodson, not good on either side of the ball in 2019.
No.
At high A as a 22-year-old, so unfortunate.
Well, he pitched and he hit, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's now officially a friend of the pod.
Drew Rasmussen sounds like a name I recognize, and I don't know why. Was he, like, notable at some point for something?
Oregon, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was there with Peterson, I think. With, oh, he made the majors this year.
Oregon State.
Ooh, we made a mistake.
Uh-oh.
I think he was there with Rutschman. I think he was on the championship team.
Mm. He made the 15 innings for the Brewers this year with a ERA of almost 6. Like, in baseball, the draft pick advantage is just so... It's really difficult to evaluate.
It almost depends where the pick is.
It's almost results-based.
Yeah. Yeah, because... Yeah, but so much of the results are also just random chance. Like, how often do you draft a guy and then suddenly he grows 4 inches?
Well, that now comes into your investment in your team in terms of coaching infrastructure and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You get the guys that can then coax out every single little bit of talent in a guy.
And I would say that it seems like for the Rays, we're using them heavily as an example. They seem to be the exception and not the rule to the small market team. Like, the Royals were really good in the years that they went to the World Series and then beat the Mets in the World Series. But, like, outside of that, they've been nothing for, like, most of my life. Like, they've never really been good.
Well, I think that's the final point we've not touched on, their constant roster churn.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the Rays are going to trade half of this roster that just went to the World Series. The Dodgers are not.
Yeah. The Dodgers are going to run this back with, like, maybe Francisco Lindor. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like that's just what's going to happen in L.A., and, like, Randy or Rosarena is going to be in Milwaukee. And then it's going to be like, well...
He's going to be in Milwaukee and also somehow not as good.
Oh, yeah, he's going to hit 230, and everyone's going to be confused. It's just like, also, I mean, as a fan, I've said this often, like, I would rather root for this, not the same players over and over again, but I would have a hard time being a Rays fan because, like I would want to get...
There's no continuity, you know?
Yeah, like I want to get a DeGrom jersey, but if DeGrom was on the Rays, he would be on a different team right now. And then I would be like, oh, well, here's my double-A prospect jersey. You know, like... From a fan point of view, it's a different story, but there's a level of attachment to players that Rays fans just won't get. Like, they have Evan Longoria.
Yeah,
you don't want a cash considerations jersey?
wait, it just hit me. That's totally why they hired Kevin Cash.
Yeah.
Whoa, the galaxy brain explosion. I mean, and then that's also what the Royals did. As annoying as this is for a fan, and I understand where you're coming from, like, it also works, and it's what you have to do to be successful in this market size, and it's exactly what the Royals didn't do.
Right? Yeah.
They just ran it back, and everyone's a year older, a year more expensive, there's less around the margins, and then suddenly they're awful again, so.
Well, hopefully the Mets don't need to be thinking about anything like that, since Steve Cohen is like 3 or 4 times over the richest owner in baseball.
He's the second most rich owner in sports.
I thought he was the richest.
I think Ballmer has more.
Oh, right. I forgot he owns a team.
Yeah.
Developers. Well, that's a throwback.
But don't forget, at the time... Whenever it was, late 2000s, early 2010s, probably not really the early 2010s, the late 2000s, the Mets had like the second or third highest payroll in baseball, and it didn't really do much for them. So.
Yeah, that's because they were paying Mo Vaughn and like...
Right, exactly, well...
Steve Ballmer with a very nice $69.6 billion.
Nice.
Really hope it's 0.69, but the Google search I did doesn't offer hundredths of a billion percentage, so we'll have to work with this.
Hundredths of a billion.
Yeah. Tens of millions? Whatever.
Mm. What is that among friends?
So that was a very long-winded way of saying, yeah, being the Dodgers is better.
Objectively.
You want to have the payroll of the Dodgers with the smarts of the Rays.
Yeah, you really want to be both.
Which is what the Dodgers are.
Which is, yeah, it is what the Dodgers are, basically.
Friedman literally invented this shit and then handed it to whatever... who's the GM in Tampa?
I have no idea.
None of us even know.
How do I not know this?
They traded him.
They traded Shame.
They did.
Julian... Oh, wait, this is hockey. I'm like, this is a name I've never even...
Well, I mean, the Lightning are pretty similar, but they also spend a lot of money. So
Julian Brisebois, the GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
He basically took over for Yzerman when he left.
Didn't they?
Who the hell
win?
Is Eric Neander?
And Neanderthal.
God damn it, Steve.
You had to see that coming.
I know. I'm sure that he's heard that a lot over his life.
Silverman is the president. That's who I knew.
Yeah, that's the name that comes to mind.
Yeah. With them. Neander is the GM, I guess. There's a reason Friedman left the Rays.
Yeah, because this is more fun to trade for Mookie Betts instead of trading him away.
Yeah,
like people like you.
Like Boston Red Sox did.
Mookie Betts good at baseball. Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger in the same
line.
Who would
have known?
Yeah. In fairness, I don't think people thought he was this good anymore. I certainly didn't think he was this good. I was wrong.
No.
Mookie Betts?
No, I mean, he was like legitimate rival to Mike Trout last season. I didn't think he was that.
He's been like God tier for a few years now.
He was like stupid in 2018 and then was just more normal elite in 2019, which is what he was before 2018. So I'm like, okay, he's going to be a 5-6 win player, not a 10 win dude.
I wonder if he knew that he was out in Boston and was like,
maybe. Cool. Yeah, maybe. To be clear, I was not doubting that Mookie Betts was good.
The degree of good.
Yeah. I was unsure about his transcendental eliteness.
Mm.
Yeah, he's like the second best player in baseball now.
That's good that you bring up transcendental eliteness, because in my notes here, I wrote regarding the Dodgers and the Rays, coincidentia oppositorum, which is a Latin phrase that's central to a lot of dualistic philosophies. So there you go.
Not.
I had to admit that I think I would have had a little bit more satisfaction if the Rays won and beat the Dodgers in the World Series just because of that whole David versus Goliath kind of mentality.
Yeah. At the same time, there are a lot of players on the Dodgers I like that I was glad to see win. Betts, Kershaw, Bellinger,
mm-hmm.
Muncy is a great story. I've always liked Corey Seager for some reason. Justin Turner pre the COVID dipshitness.
Pre being a super spreader.
Yeah, pre being an irresponsible douche, you know.
I mean, ever since his days at the Mets, he's been a kind of tool bag, so.
There's a difference between being like an on-field villain and then doing that, though.
Well, he was with the Mets, he was the hero half the time, but he was still just a tool bag.
Yeah.
The freaking the pie thing, remember the pies?
I forgot about this, actually.
Right, now instead of pies, it's COVID.
Nobody read the tweet.
Wasn't he the one who, like, slammed it into Valdespin's face, like, broke his nose at one time?
I don't remember that, but oh, God.
I don't remember that, but I kind of hope it happened. No.
I don't think he actually broke Valdespin's nose, but he,
Could
like...
Can you imagine the Mets tweet, like, on IR, face broken by pie.
Like,
day to day.
He was dug out with the face mask on, like a basketball player.
Yeah, exactly. And because they all hated Valdespin, right? And like he pied him after a walk off hit or something. It was definitely a little bit too aggressive. No one remembers this.
Aggressive pieing. I don't recall that.
I mean, we've established that I'm losing my mind multiple times on this podcast.
I'm typing in Valdespin pie Turner, so let's see what happens.
Oh boy, this is good.
A pie in the face was a cheap shot. Valdespin's teammates.
Wow. How do you remember that?
So, here's the thing, right?
It was John Buck, though. It wasn't...
Oh, it was Buck? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. In my defense, they look kind of similar, right? Like,
I mean, back then.
They're basically the same person. I mean...
No.
World Series champion, John Buck.
Generic white dude with a big beard, you know? This is...
And completely bald. And Justin Turner with his bright red hair.
Yeah, but his hair wasn't long back then. Look, I watch, like, any movie and can quote it word for word. Like, I can do the 12 hours of Lord of the Rings from memory. I don't know that I could recite my social security number, though. So that's basically a snapshot into how my memory works.
Go ahead, give it a try. What is your social security
number? Yeah, let me do that on the podcast.
Wait, hold on. Let me get a notepad out.
Well, that's still pretty impressive that you remember this whole situation happening.
That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
That you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering some pies.
Well, long and the short of it is, yeah, be the Dodgers, spend money, invest in analytics, invest in scouting, invest in your team, and reap the rewards.
Generally take pride in what you're trying to do.
Yeah. don't let the owners... son manage the team, you know, that's not a good idea.
But also,
perhaps most importantly, an intermeshing of your front office and your coaching staff at all levels, because like the Rays and Dodgers acquire people for nothing and then they get better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen with the Mets too often.
No,
they mostly get worse when
yeah.
the Mets get them.
Yes, JD Davis is like a freak accident.
They were definitely not intending on that.
Happening. Even the Mets don't know what happened.
Yeah, like...
Pakoda said the same thing.
The Mets are like, wait, what? JD Davis is good? We made a good trade?
I just kept crawling and it worked out.
All right, well, Matt, I hope that long, rambling answer satisfies you.
With multiple irrelevant non sequiturs and segues, you know.
Well, that is, that's our show, so. Do we have any last words for the week?
Tweet at Steve Cohen. Oh, Steve Cohen, follow Rich Staff on Twitter.
True.
It's a great follow.
Not really. I mean, he is, but he isn't. Like, I want to punch things sometimes.
You will simultaneously gain and lose brain cells. Science
right, exactly.
determines
yeah.
whether the rate of gain or decline is faster. Roll the dice.
All right, if you have any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us your emails at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at ken1191. Thomas is at sadmetseason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
I'm Sean Ramos-Firm, host of Today Explained. 4 years ago, Donald Trump from reality TV won the presidency, and our shared reality hasn't been the same since. We struggled to remember what this president said or did last month, let alone in 2017. This week, we're wrapping up our effort to help you remember, our series on the Trump years.
I do think it was a really powerful harbinger for what not only was going to come, but what had to come.
Rebecca Traitster from New York Magazine will run through the awakening of protest under President Trump. And Vox's editor-at-large, Ezra Klein, will explain what comes next.
This story is not ended. And the verdict we get on Election Day will not be the final verdict either.
The final episodes of The Trump Years, this week on Today Explained, wherever you listen.